Yeah.
Okay, that's the way we like to get her done.
Yeah.
You're up, Michael.
Well, we only have an hour, too. So we did submit to the, we did hold a hearing, was it last week?
Yeah, it was last week.
We held a public hearing with the city council for our annual annual performance evaluation and reporting to HUD for all the CDBG and home activities. If you got from the back, there's a poster that looks like this, which you were also emailed, and it details all the expenditures and programs that were funded with the outcomes over the past year. And I think we discussed this as well last year, but we're providing this to you instead of the 27-page caper printout because it's
that's generous of you.
Well, it's also, I mean, if you've seen the IDIS printout, it doesn't really tell you anything. You know, it's a lot of tables. They're not all filled out. IDIS will not fill them out for you, but this gives you, gives you a pretty accurate and detailed breakdown of what you would want to know. And Sam, is there anything you want to go over? Okay. But if you have any questions, I'll answer them. I'm not going to go through. I do it at the hearing. I read through everything because it's a public hearing and I'm required to. But I won't bore you for 10 minutes of reading. But if you have any specific questions on anything that's on this, please let me know. And I'll be happy to answer them. Okay.
Next up.
So last time, I think it was last time we met, we discussed, we just had a monitoring from HUD with our two CPD representatives, and I gave you a memorandum on, they had two concerns that they had identified as for a potential finding, which we disagreed with, and those concerns were regarding, they questioned the viability, the legal validity of a survivability clause, which is in our contracts, in our home contracts, and they also questioned the legal validity of the practice of incorporating documents into an agreement by reference. And, I gave you a pretty detailed memo with what the county position was on any concern that the HUD monitoring the HUD monitors had while they were here. Overall, it was a pretty outstanding monitoring. Like, they were very happy with the processes that were in place. They were happy with the staff knowledge. They were happy with the organization of everything. So there were only those two specific things that they left us with. Then 30 days later, roughly 30 days later, we got their monitoring report, which did have one finding listed, and which they did tell us when they were leaving that they were anticipating one finding, which was based on the survivability clause. Much to our surprise, though, the finding they listed was not a survivability clause at all. When they left, with the agreement that they would take our documents to their Seattle office, the HUD Office of General Counsel, to review the documents and, give them feedback on the validity of a survivability clause in incorporation documents. And they were found, the Office of General Counsel told them, yes, these are legitimate, mainstream, valid things that happen in the contracting world or are used in the contracting world. So what they came back with a finding was that our agreements do not have all the required elements in 24 CFR, the regulation that rules home. And they indicated two specific things. One is that the agreements did not have a valid repayment provision, that if all the HUD program requirements were not met by a program, that we did not require repayment of the HUD funds.
We did require repayment through foreclosure. I don't want to interrupt, but it's not, it isn't that we didn't require repayment.
Well, they said that we didn't have a valid repayment provision. The agreement itself did not have a repayment provision, that it was a deed of trust which was incorporated into the agreement. But yes.
Sorry.
No, you're, what you're saying is correct, as well. But and then the second, I just blanked out on the second one.
Sorry, get that budget detail.
Oh, yes, and that we didn't have a budget in sufficient detail. So our response, and none of these things were discussed at the outbrief as concerns. Our response, and we went through all our notes, and when I'm saying we, myself and our, Sam, the program staff with our finance and compliance manager, Harold Raines, and our finance person, John Jokela, and our contracts team, and the county, Larry Stafford, our county auditor representative, we all sat around the table and looked at all our notes from the outbrief, and none of those two things were discussed. And they were also factually incorrect, on both of the things that they called out as reasons to have a finding. The first one, in terms of the repayment provision, it was incorrect in two parts. The first one was they seem to have actually missed in our agreement itself that we do require repayment of HUD funds. Like, they didn't see it at all. And what's that? Yeah, you have to read it, absolutely. And they did have the agreements, but both agreements that they reviewed had the repayment provisions exactly as they recommended. They seemed to have just completely missed it. And their second point, which was what Sam was going on to, was, well, you do have a repayment provision in the deed of trust, but we don't consider it a valid repayment provision, because even though you're requiring repayment of those funds, you don't really have a recourse if the entity that was funded refuses to pay you back, even though the agreement that they signed requires it. The only recourse you have is to foreclose on the property. So that was kind of our reaction, initially. But the specific recommendation by the HUD monitor and the monitoring report was that we should be able to sue the private individuals behind the proposal, if necessary, like not just be limited to foreclosure. So prosecuting attorney, our legal counsel, and our contracts, and our auditor disagree that with the very idea that the foreclosure would not be sufficient or a valid repayment provision. Which there's some other backup here that Sam just got back from the NACIP conference where HUD presented, and almost all our home projects are low-income housing tax credit projects. And with low-income housing tax credit projects, our financial assistance is required to be in the form of a loan, and it has to be a non-recourse loan in accordance with IRS rules, section 704. So we are, which would make even the recommendation that HUD had for that issue not valid, like not legally viable. The second issue that they had in terms of not having a budget with sufficient detail. Our contracts do have a budget, which if you've looked at any of our home contracts, we do. We have a budget that details the funded amount, the total amount for project, for acquisition, for construction costs, for non-construction costs. It's not a construction budget, it's a project budget. And reviewing our notes, And this was not an issue again during debrief as an issue of potential finding. But during the monitoring, we did have a meeting where the CPD representative was asking us about budget detail. And we were asking him, well, what kind of detail are you looking for? Because it had never been a question or issue with our with any of our HUD representatives or any previous monitoring that what we had was not sufficient. So, you know, we were asking, well, what kind of detail are you looking for? And it was pretty clear in the person's answers that what they were looking for was a detailed construction budget. And our answer was, well, if you're looking for a construction budget, we do have that. And it is, actually, technically, it is part of the agreement because it's written in, through, you know, because it's incorporated by reference as part of the proposal, and you're happy to review that. And they reviewed it, and they were satisfied with the level of detail, and that was the last we heard of it. So what came back in the monitoring response was that the initial project which they reviewed that budget was complete and accurate. A second project that they reviewed, there was a difference in the construction budget and the final budget of about $2 million. Like the final budget was $2 million more. And therefore, it was not a complete and accurate budget. And we went back and we looked through all our files because that didn't make any sense to us. The budget they reviewed was complete and accurate. It did not contradict our contract budget. The person reviewing the budgets didn't seem to understand that they were looking at a construction budget, which is part of the total budget, but it's not all of the total budget, and the difference between the construction and the total budget was the difference that they were saying was the change. So there wasn't a change in budget. It was just, you know, they were just wrong. So it's true. Am I being accurate? Or I'm not saying that with judgment. I'm just explaining accuracy. So in our response, what we're saying is we disagree with their finding, and we explain in detail why. You can take it, it's been emailed to you. You can take it back and read it. And we ask them to review review the issues that they're pointing out again and to withdraw the finding. So, that's what I'm explaining to you is not just my opinion in a bubble. Like, we've sat around the table with a team, reviewed notes, looked at files again, and it really did not make any sense in their monitoring reply. It really came across, and now I am being subjective here and speculative, but it really came across like they left here telling us that we were going to have a finding, which we didn't agree with, and we asked them for legal review. The legal review validated what we were telling them, and they still wanted to give a finding, so they came up with something. And fortunately, what they came up with is pretty easy to objectively refute and just point at specific things on why. Having explained all that, I do not know what the outcome is going to be. CPD representative that was here during the monitoring, and that was her first monitoring, no longer works for HUD because she accepted a job, I think, with the Washington State Department of Energy. I believe that's what it was. And we do have a new CPD rep who is going through our response and is preparing something. I do know that there is at least one grantee and jurisdiction that have had findings withdrawn by HUD in the past. It's not what they usually do. So I think our odds are fairly good, but our odds are they're very good if you look at things objectively. They're not necessarily, they're iffy if you look at HUD, the way HUD works. But that's the brief on where we're at with the HUD monitoring. But please feel free to review both their 14-page monitoring letter and our 5-page response.
When was your response sent out?
Our response was sent out on, let me look at the date. Does it not have the date on it? It was sent out August. It was either late August or early September. It was sent out like within 45 days. Like it was near the 45-day mark of their July 20 letter. I don't know why it doesn't have the date on it. Any other questions?
So if they still continue to stand by their finding, is it just about rearranging words?
Well, actually, so in the letter, interestingly, you know, they do have a corrective action. And every time they do a monitoring and they have a finding, there is corrective action that you're supposed to take. The corrective action they asked for was for us to redo our written agreement, our home written agreement, to have it reviewed and approved by our HUD CPD representative before we do a new written agreement. So when the monitors left when the monitors left before we got the monitoring response, with our understanding of everything they had looked at and any issues that they had, we were pretty proactive. Sam was extremely proactive, and you know, with our CPD representative, of making all the changes that they recommended into our home written agreement, and submitted it to the CPD representative for review. And we have the response from the CPD representative saying this looks good, it meets all CFR requirements, and we actually signed it, you know, with their sign off, utilized it for Isabella Court Phase 2. And then we got our monitoring response.
So that was with the first finding?
Yes. That did not come back as a finding. But because the issues of repayment provision and detailed budget were never part of what we had discussed, the new agreement, which the CPD representative reviewed and approved prior to our use, there are no changes to those two things. So, which is kind of weird if they were going to find us on that. But, like, you know, it really was bizarre. So in answering to your question, until further notice, as far as we know, we've already done all the corrective actions they've requested. If anything, you know, one thing that I think they're going to have to withdraw for sure is the repayment provision. You know, I can't imagine they stand by the repayment provision because, first and most importantly, they just missed it. You know, it's there. And what they recommended was there. You know, the second piece is if they wanted to question the validity of repayment provisions in the articles incorporated into the agreement by reference, like the deed of trust, by law, what we have as a repayment provision requirement is what we can have. You know, we legally cannot implement what they recommended. You know, so I cannot imagine that standing. If anything stands, it would be the complete and accurate budget. The budget is accurate. It is complete, and the CFR does not detail what elements need to be in it. It doesn't specify that what needs to be in it to be considered accurate, and it has never been an issue before. But because the CFR does not detail what exactly needs to be in it, if anything were to stand, it would be, well, we think there needs to be more detail in your budget, you know, in the written agreement budget. I think that'd be pretty, you know, that would be pretty grasping at straws, but and it would be easy for us to add detail to our budget if we have to. So, you know, we'll do it if we have to.
How much time have you and you guys spent on this? Any idea?
A lot. a lot. Honestly, Councilor Olson, we've discussed, I would never do this. This would not be up to me. This would be up to you if you wanted to. But part of me really was tempted to send both their monitoring report and our response to our congressional and senator representatives so they had some insight of what we deal with by HUD as grantees and sub-grantees. Because utilizing these funds and managing them, I mean, it's worth it because of the good it brings the community. But in terms of you know, there isn't any winning, you know, for the communities that do it other than just bringing the good to it. But I would never do that as staff. So, but any other questions? Okay.
All right.
Sam, do you want to go over the application?
Sure.
And this is very brief.
Yeah, it should actually be an action item, though, because this summer I wanted to bump up our home maximum request from $250,000 to $300,000. We said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do it. And we're like, oh, wait, this is for you to decide. So if that is okay with you, that is how it's set up now, because I didn't expect that there would be any big problems with that. But the question is, does the board approve of the home application request amount up to $300,000? Right now it's at $250,000. That'd be one change.
So are we going to restrict the number of applicants or anything?
We planned, and we had talked previously to the board about only funding one TVRA application this year, but we're not restricted who can apply, but we're hoping to only fund. It's going to depend on what other applications come in. If we don't have any other construction applications, we might as well get the money out there. But the 2018 Community Services Northwest Award, they've already given back because they haven't really even tapped into their 2017 award. So I think they might have. There's a huge demand for rental assistance. We need to get people housed. But at the same time, the Vancouver Affordable Housing Fund put in rental assistance, and then the building hasn't taken off as fast, and so there's no units. So we put out all this rent assistance into the community, and then people couldn't find housing, and it all just kind of sat there. So we're not making it a policy to only ever fund one TIBRA application forever after, but at this point, this year, that'll give them a little bit of time to catch up, I think.
But the rationale for increasing the maximum award amount from 250 to 300,000 is because there's so little you can do with $250,000 in terms of construction, even regardless of the size of the project. And we do have, we have to commit and expend our funds in a timely manner as per federal regulations. So having that smaller limit makes it more challenging. It means you need more projects to expend all the funds that you have. So that's the rationale.
So do you need a motion?
Yes.
I move to increase it to $300,000.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The other thing that is changing this year is the five-year American Community Survey data, and so that might shift some of our eligible census tracts and block groups. And unfortunately, HUD is expecting to release that around January, so we'll have all of our applications in. Not all of them might be eligible projects once that data changes, but at least last time they released it after we made our awards and we couldn't contract, so at least we'll know. Going into March, we should know by then if any of the projects have to drop out because of the eligible areas.
And it doesn't mean they have to drop out necessarily. It just means if it's not an eligible area, we'll do an income survey, which we have all gotten the used to doing. So we'll just move forward. We'll talk with each of the applicants and see if that's what they want to do. Correct. If you've already done a survey, then you become eligible.
Good.
Yes.
You didn't want to do another one?
So not much has changed otherwise for all the questions on the CDBG and home applications. That they look very similar to last year. We did add an equity question at the end, which is worth no points, but we, depending on how people answer that question, we might include part of that into their contract for the project, if it fits in with what they're doing. I think that's all I have. The pre-submittal conference will start here at 9:30 if anybody's staying for that. But we could also answer any questions that you have beforehand so you don't have to wait it out, because not a lot has changed in the application.
Questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, anything else for the good of the order? Yeah.
We actually, in your packets is the quarterly report. So rather than just emailing it to you and getting, we know that you guys get a lot of email, we wanted to make sure that we started doing this at our actual meetings. So the home and CDBG quarterly reports will start being a regular thing here at our meetings to review the projects, and then that way we're here and can easily answer any questions that you might have about if a project is on schedule, if it's spending on time, or anything like that. So in your packets, we do have both the CDBG and the home quarterly reports for April through June.
And you've been getting them via email, but and we actually decided doing this after we did the agenda. So it will be an agenda item in future meetings. But we thought it would be useful to everyone involved to actually be able to lay eyes on it here at the meeting, and together, if there are any questions about project status, outcomes, expenditures, we can ask and discuss it here. It will also be helpful when we get new proposals of similar projects by the people submitting the proposals who've already been receiving home and CDBG funds. It will give you a frame of reference for what that performance has been, so I think it will help with the lens whenever you review proposals.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? All right, well then we will adjourn. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.